Hey, Channel Insiders. Welcome to Channel Insider Partner POV. I'm Katie Bovoso, and today I'm interviewing Dawn Sizer, CEO of Third Element, an MSP focused on IT solutions and cybersecurity, catering to verticals like municipal government, law firms, and cannabis. We dig into the challenges of securing and serving this inconsistently regulated industry, as well as Dawn's approach to education as a value add and not a scare tactic. Welcome, Dawn.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for being on. We're here to talk all about you. We're here to talk all about Third Element. So why don't we start out with a description of your business? You are an MSP that is highly focused on IT support and cybersecurity. So talk to me a little bit about how long you've been in the market and what it is that you do and who you serve, Dawn.
So we have been around since 2005, which is a long time in the MSP world. In fact, I don't even think the word MSP existed back then.
No.
So we were, you know, a standard IT provider back in the day, right? Oh my gosh, like all the things that you do as a service provider, it's like the perception of the client sometimes drives where your business goes. And again, because we came out so early, we came out as a consulting group. So we consulted on anything that was technology related at that point. So literally, if it plugged into the wall, I think that's where the perception of the client thought that we did everything. And that's kind of where things started. And then we got a little bit more focused, especially as security became more forefront. We actually started as a physical security group and moved. Yeah, I know, right? So we were a subsidiary of a physical security group originally, and we spun out into what we are now, but we were security focused, have always been security focused, which is a little bit different from everybody else when they started out with like, oh, we do break fix and we do this kind of thing. And now we have to add in security and we're like, we've been there for a while. So yes, we were always focused on that. Yes, we've always been focused on clients that I think are probably labeled as more higher risk than others are. We do a lot of work in the law enforcement government area, especially in the local area. We do a lot of work for legal, and it's a lot of the folks that focus in on very specific legal aspects of things. And it's usually injury or workers' compensation or things that, you know, PII and HIPAA and things that are along those lines that touches. And then we also do a lot of work in the cannabis industry, which is like the weirdest three things to focus on.
Are we talking recreational or are we talking medicinal? Because they both...
Depends on the state.
Oh, really? Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So...
What is that like for you having to be
it's
able
weird.
To serve that? Yeah, it's so
it's
it
weird.
Varies.
It's weird. And it's interesting. To be fair, a lot of us that do what we do, we're puzzle solvers at heart, right? So it's the, okay, we're applying IT to a thing, whether it's, you know, a manufacturing, cultivation, retail, whatever variety that you have in that cannabis world there, it's, you know, just applying IT to it. But it's the puzzle piece of it is of, you know, what regulations are surrounding it for this particular area, and then the state, and then at the federal level, what does this all look like? What can we touch? What can't we touch? How does this look for us when we're talking about money, you know, how things move in the money world, because that's all federally regulated. How are they running their business? What does that look like? So there's all kinds of little intricacies that go into it. And most of them have very specialized attorneys, tax attorneys, that kind of thing that help them navigate those waters very well and have helped us navigate those waters very well. As well.
And for those who are watching, I keep in mind that our audience can be based anywhere. For those who are watching here in the US, when it comes to cannabis, otherwise known as marijuana, it is very state by state. From a federal level, it's illegal. From state by state, it's either legal for medicinal purposes. Some states, like the one I'm in, Massachusetts, allow it for recreational purposes. So you could buy it, it's taxed. And if you're like, that sounds messy, it is.
It is very messy.
We don't even know how to keep up with it sometimes here.
Well, what's strange, even with our banking, we had bought a secondary property at one point. Oh. And one of the questions coming down through was, do you do business with any marijuana industries? And we're like, yes, but it's business to business kind of thing. And they're like, nope, we can't have you on our bank. And they literally gave us 30 days to get out of their bank. You can imagine trying to move all of your banking in 30 days. Like, it's nearly impossible. We don't do business with them anymore.
Going back to the cybersecurity aspect of it, when it comes to that industry, what are we talking? Is it like any other business that you deal with law, with legal? Or do you find that they're often attacked more by foreign adversaries? Is it ransomware? Just give me an idea of when it comes to the risk, what do you see as a pattern?
They're a target the same way that anything else is. From a security aspect, the bigger risk for them is in the physical security because of the cash that they have to carry. So the average, you know, stop and rob kind of thing, like the convenience store isn't the easiest thing anymore. It's actually the marijuana places.
Okay. Because of the amount of cash.
Yeah. Exactly. So for the amount of cash that they have on hand. So from the business aspect, it's the IP around the product that they're protecting. Like that's the soft mushy center for them as far as that goes. That's the IP. The way that they're producing, cultivating, getting the actual molecules to go in the right direction to create different things. Let's put it that way. I think that's really where the things that they want to protect the most as far as that goes, but everything else is the same. You know, you want to make sure that you protect your people. You want to make sure that they're doing security awareness training because it only takes one person saying yes to something to get access to something else, and then they're in your IP.
So much to consider there. And definitely it sounds familiar. It sounds familiar as far as any other business that would be regulated or one that you would commonly hear in most shops. So interesting to hear about the differences in the regulations there that you have to consider with that. I want to move on to talk about the educational aspect that you are so passionate about when it comes to your LinkedIn lives, the videos that you create, the podcasts that you host. You're very passionate about both educating clients and educating your colleagues, which I think is really important in this industry that can often be considered. There's gatekeeping going on. I think that happens because people are worried about giving up to their competition. So I love the fact that you go in there and you're a voice of reason for the community. With that said, I was actually listening to a live stream on LinkedIn this morning, a replay of it that you did with DataStream Cyber Insurance about disaster preparedness and business continuity. One thing that you said that struck me was you said that cybersecurity and compliance can actually make a customer's businesses more valuable. And I stopped and thought about it because that was the first time I ever heard anybody put a positive spin on that side of it. If you can believe it, it's usually a doom and gloom kind of conversation of the downtime, the data loss, you could lose your business. So when it comes to that approach, has that been a more successful approach to customer education than the opposite side of it? What has it been like in your experience?
I don't believe in FUD. I don't like that fear, uncertainty, and doubt thing. Like, I think that's ridiculous. And the people that push it, it's a turnoff for me. I think I've been handled that way on repeat, whether it's because of who I am, the gender that I am, whatever that is. Like when you go to buy a car, I had to like take my husband with me because it didn't go well, especially early on. Mm-hmm. So I tend to spin it the other way and explaining to them, especially the folks that have a valued business, right? Government's a little bit different. Then you're talking about, you know, protecting things appropriately because you don't want to have to, you know, explain to your residents or constituents or whatever that you had an issue. That's how you lose your job. That's where the fear, uncertainty, and doubt kicks in. But that's fact. You know, we want to make sure that that doesn't happen. But on the side of valuation, right? If you're looking to do an exit, if you're looking to put value into your business, protecting it is one of the best ways to build value, whether it's protecting it from, you know, ransomware or protecting it from an insider or protecting it from an outsider. You're building value into that particular business. And then if you can tell people that, hey, we've been insured for years. This is, you know, who our insurance company is. We, you know, we do all of these things. We're ticking all these boxes. If you're going to sell or get valuated or going for money or anything like that, those are extremely valuable points to be able to add in to talk about. You're going to get the money that you're looking for. If you're looking for, you know, private equity or VC or anything like that for funding, you know, if anybody else is looking to buy your business, to be able to say, well, they're actually in a really good spot. I'm not going to have to invest gobs of money to turn this thing around. You're literally putting, I don't even know what the valuation would be on that, but it's got to be a force multiplier of like 2 or 3, I would think.
Absolutely. And I would imagine that it also makes you, it becomes a waterfall effect, right? You and your compliant cyber insurance companies will trust you more. When you do education within your business more than once a year, cyber insurance companies will trust you more. It just becomes an easier thing to get more accolades after that and build trust, not just within your end user base, but within the companies that you need to keep your business going legally and professionally.
Well, 100%. But I mean, even looking at acquisitions from where we're sitting right now, when you start asking them about, you know, how are you running cybersecurity? What does that look like for you? And they're like, oh, we don't really do that. We're still doing time and material. And you're like, okay, that's a lot of money I'm going to have to put into that business. Or, you know, when you're vetting another vendor or maybe you're, you know, partnering with a marketing company and you're like, great, how do you run your security? And they're like, what do you mean? Okay, not doing business with you.
Yeah. That's important to consider too. I mean, when you're talking to new customers or potentially even talking to partners to cross partner in the space, what are some of those red flags that pop out to you immediately aside from what are you talking about when you say cyber insurance or compliance?
Exactly. And I know when we were looking at partnering with a marketing company, one of the questions that I had asked was, how are you protecting me as we're, you know, moving data around? And they're like, what do you mean?
Oh, no.
I'm like, I shouldn't have to tell you this. Like, I shouldn't. Like, if you're not running any type of, you know, security posture inside of your own organization. And she's like, well, we do contractors. And I'm like, no, I'm all done. I can't take that risk.
No. At that point, you could say, do you need my business? Do you need me to come and protect you? It sounds like you
need
to hire
me. I did. And they're like, oh, no, we're fine. I'm like, okay.
What is the biggest challenge when it comes to talking to your customers about cybersecurity and compliance? Is it a cost for them? Is it just not understanding? When it comes to just explaining to them what they need to be safe, do you ever have the same conversation over and over?
I think there's business maturity types of things that you run into, right? Some people have a really good business maturity. They have business acumen. They are forward thinking. They're visionary people, you know, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. They're super easy to deal with because you can tell them, you know, these are facts. I'm laying them out on the table. I don't care who you use, whether it's us, somebody else, I don't care. But these are the things that you actually just need to do to be generally compliant, to be a business in this day and age. And whether you're, you know, following a framework that you have, you know, regulated by the government on you, or whether you're following a framework just to stay safer, doesn't necessarily make you 100% safe, but chances are it's going to make you safer. So that's a great way to start that. But the ones that are small and think that it won't happen to them because they're too small, don't understand that they're simply a payday. It's not about size. They're just a payday target is all it is. And chances are the smaller ones, if I can get 10 small ones to make my day as a hacker, I don't need to go after the harder big one.
Just because it's not in the headlines doesn't mean it's not happening.
100%. Criminals are criminals. Some of them are a little smarter than others. But one thing I have learned from my clients is that criminals are generally not smart people. They're going to follow the path of least resistance. So if you are the path of least resistance, you're going to be the target they go after.
It's a numbers game. They will find you.
100%.
Going on from there, Dawn, education is something that you are very passionate about, as I said earlier, but I also mean that in the sense of educating your clients with either gamification or with some sort of tabletop setup, some way of making it fun. For you, when you talk about education within your customers' environments, what do you like to go to? Is there anything that you recommend for them to be able to keep up on their internal education for cybersecurity? Or is there a method that you choose to use? Or even just how often do you recommend doing it?
I recommend security awareness training, 100%. You should always do that with your clients, like no doubt about that. Should you do more than that? 100%, you should do more than that. Most people don't want to. Most people want to do a once and done security awareness training for the year, which, okay, but we all know that the fact is that 90% of those people don't remember that training. There's only 10% of them that'll even remember pieces of that training throughout the year. And we know that your people, 90% of the time, are the ones that start that breach. So this isn't correlation, this is causation in this case. So if you're looking at it from the business owner standpoint, should you, you know, train your people every single month? 100%. You should train your people every single month. Should you get it in small bites? Absolutely. One little piece at a time. Here's something that we're going to focus on this month. Here's something we're going to focus on next month. And we're going to go back over those things in various detail month after month after month till it sticks, because it doesn't always stick for an adult the first time through. Sometimes you have to see it 3 or 4 times in order for it to truly stick, truly be understood. And what people don't understand, that the really sophisticated bad actors or threat actors will go out. They will look at your company. They will look at LinkedIn. They will look at anything that they can get for information ahead of time. And they're going to pick their targets and they're going to do it carefully. So if they're looking at, you know, age demographics or things along those lines, they're going to figure out, well, you know, maybe there's a demographic, you know, over here, maybe there's a demographic over here. Those ones usually will hit a little more often. They're going to pick those. They're going to target those specifically. So you have to really start to think like a threat actor as a business owner, and the people that you want to protect the most. Again, it's that whole, like, what are we protecting? What data are we protecting? Who has access to it? What does that look like? Who would be my targets and all of that? And how do we make sure that they are trained appropriately so that that doesn't happen?
Especially in the age of AI, where anyone could make very quickly a scamming email or a link, something that looks very legitimate, and be able to send it to you. It no longer is about the spelling errors and the kind of like strange things about it that you can't quite put your finger on. They can bypass that. It's become a lot easier to fool people because of things like AI. Speaking of which, I did bring up AI. I know that it's something where you're building guardrails around it for your clients so that you don't say you can't use it, but you have to consider what you're using it for. Can you walk me through that conversation of how that's going with your clients right now? Has anybody come to you and said, well, we want to put Copilot on everything in our government office? And have you had to talk to them about why that's not okay?
Yeah, we've had both sides of the house, right? We've had the government folks, we've had some legal folks, we've had a couple other people come in and say, look, we either really like this idea, or we really hate it and don't ever want to see, talk about it, anything again, which totally fine. I get that, you know, aspect of it as well. But the folks that are interested in it are typically interested in it, one, for mostly the right reasons, in how can we use this to make ourselves more efficient? So that's a great conversation starter on the efficiency piece. Like, great. Here's what we need to consider for all of that. It's not going to make everyone more efficient. It's going to make your highly skilled people more efficient. So who's highly skilled in your organization? What are they doing? What are some of the tasks around, you know, AI that maybe we could, you know, use to make them more efficient? And then once we have that conversation framed a little bit, then it's great. Now, what are we protecting? What are we protecting from the AI? And you're like, oh, wait, what do you mean we have to protect things from the AI? Well, you have IP, you have, you know, personal information, you have all of this stuff that you don't want AI to get access to. So then you talk to them about data loss prevention and categorizing all of their data and things along those lines. And once they kind of get it, then it's, oh, so all we have to do is form these little silos within our business and we can tell AI what it can and can't touch. That's really what it boils down to. And then you create a policy of what you can and can't use AI for and make sure that other people understand in your organization that they can't just go out and use, you know, ChatGPT or Claude or whatever that's out there for random things for the business and what things they can use it for. Because you're going to have to tell them they can use it for some things, but where data leaking is happening, that can't be a thing. So I think once they get that, the light bulb comes on, and then you have very deep and good conversations about protecting the data. And it's not about AI anymore. It's about protecting the data, which is an overarching theme anyway, right? You want to protect your data from external threats, internal threats, AI threats.
Speaking of just thinking about your educational side and your side of making sure that you're keeping people safe, is that something you're seeing in more less mature MSPs right now, maybe newer ones who are kind of coming up in the age of AI and they're using it for ways that you have to say, hey, you got to cut that out right now?
I actually heard somebody tell me that they were using AI to format their documentation for another product. And like literally, it was at a conference and we all just like held our breath for a moment. And it was one of those moments of, oh my, I can't believe that just happened. And then we're like, did you sanitize the data first before you entered it into ChatGPT? And they're like, there was enough of a pause, like you knew they didn't. And they're like, oh yeah, yeah, of course we did. I'm like, okay. So yes, to answer your question, I think there's convenience. Convenience trumps a lot of things. Convenience and swiftness trumps a lot of things in an MSP because we just don't have a lot of time for things and we're not thinking on our feet. One, as leaders, as people that are managing other people or as the people that are running the tickets, right? We're not thinking about the information that we're putting into any type of AI, whether it's a large language model or anything else. Like, is it being used to train it? Is it going somewhere? Is it staying within a particular system? What does that look like? Like, we have something that we use for process documentation internally that actually has AI built into it, but it doesn't go anywhere. It's just a piece. It's not training anything, doesn't go anywhere. It's only used inside of this particular thing. So can we put specific data for our organization in there about our processes and the things that it touches? Yes, because it's not training a model. It's not going anywhere outside of that particular instance. But it's the things that, you know, if you're putting it directly into a large language model, then it's being used to train other people. And that information is going to be available for other people to pull.
There is plenty more to hear from Dawn Sizer. Come back on Tuesday for part 2. Thank you so much to Dawn for joining me today, and thanks to you for watching or listening. You can check out every episode of Channel Insider Partner POV on channelinsider.com or on youtube.com/channelinsider_news and trends. You can also listen to us as a podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. Don't forget to like, subscribe, and follow to never miss an episode. And if you'd like to, come connect with us on social media at Channel Insider on LinkedIn and X, or me at Katie Bovoso on both platforms as well. Once again, I'm Katie Bovoso, and I'll see you next time.